This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
Well, it is Monday, the 3rd of February, and this is your BizNews briefing. In our lead story, we look at Trump's order to stop all funding to South Africa pending an investigation into the land expropriation bill, which was signed into order by President Ramaphosa recently. Our Bloomberg colleagues are on the ground at the mining indaba in Cape Town, and Jennifer Zabazala has the latest with the context from the mining indaba.
It's really quite fascinating, and the timing of this as well, because as you mentioned, this was something signed by President Cyril Ramaphosa just 2 weeks ago. It caused a bit of division, depending on who you spoke to. And in particular, we have this government of national unity, some of which say this was just a revision and an update to a law that was back in 1975. But other people are saying this is really going against what this country stands for. So yes, as you mentioned, this is expropriation without compensation, but the details are important here. And what the government says is a lot of these lands, if they are to be seized by the government, they are largely going to be abandoned buildings. And so, yes, we're now hearing President Trump taking aim at this. We should note that one of his closest advisors, Elon Musk, was born in South Africa. Potentially, that is something that he has thought about. But this could be significant for the country. You mentioned that the rand was tanking. We've actually seen it weaken against the dollar. Not just that, we're looking at aid over the past two decades that's been upwards of $8 billion. So this could be significant for the country, not something that Cyril Ramaphosa necessarily wants to hear. We're actually hearing from South Africa's foreign minister specifically about this and saying that the Expropriation Act is not exceptional, as many other countries have similar legislation. And he's saying that hopefully the U.S. uses this time instead to investigate and look into what this law is actually doing before acting too quick. But yes, a bit of trumping a lot of the news that we're focused on here is the potential for this rescinded aid and also the tariffs, Tom.
Yeah, and of course, a big chunk of that aid apparently reportedly going to South Africa's continuing and ongoing fight against HIV as well. So the potential human impact is there. Yeah. Look, you're on the ground, of course, Jen, at the African Mining Indaba Conference. What is the reaction there on the ground when we weigh up, of course, the commodity space and the reaction amongst leaders within the minerals and commodities and mining space to these tariffs?
Yeah, I mean, Tom, prior to this announcement overnight, there was already a hanging concern about what a global trade war would mean for global commodity prices, right? And this is coming at a time where a lot of African countries and companies are really trying to get more value add when it comes to mining. And so this is not something that they necessarily want to hear, because this is going to essentially affect what it is that they're able to benefit from the actual extraction and downstream process. And so, yes, you can expect it's going to be a lot of the discussion around here, and potentially even will heighten what we do hear from countries, many of which have already tried to rewrite some of the code around these mining deals. They're going to factor in what we're seeing with prices and how that could affect long-term agreements.
The story is going to continue to dominate news flow for most of this week. But an interesting view that has come to the fore is that of Terence Corrigan from the Institute of Race Relations, who started looking at the topic some 17 years ago when the ANC first attacked property rights. And Corrigan has spent much of his time since then really trying to understand the ANC's motives and the consequences in this regard. BizNews' editor Alec Hogg sat down with Corrigan earlier today to explore his insights.
One doesn't have to like Donald Trump. One doesn't have to agree with Donald Trump. But South Africa, or the South African state, and more so the ANC as a party, has spent at least 20 years making it clear that it despises America. You read ANC documents. The United States is presented directly as an enemy. Now, you know, people say, well, this is all Donald Trump. And I'm sure over the next couple of days, we'll see all sorts of, keyboard warriors going on about how, you know, this shows what a dreadful fellow Trump is. relations, and we're not particularly warm under Obama. They weren't particularly warm under Joe Biden. In fact, the EFF put out a statement, wishing, ill health and a bad journey to Reuben Brigidy, Biden's ambassador. He literally quoted ANC documents about how dreadful the US was. So, you know, I do think that a nation's posturing does have consequences. And I think the tragedy for South Africa is we just do not have a particularly competent and skilled diplomatic service. Something that I was asked repeatedly by, or that I am asked repeatedly with visitors from abroad, why can South Africa not function like Vietnam or like India, which, you know, have diverse interests and manage to play one off against the other, but can maintain very, very close and cordial relations with the United States, all things considered. India is a member of the BRICS group. It has been very kind of soft soaping on Russia over Ukraine, but it still has very, very intimate and friendly relations with the United States. South Africa, you know, seems to be, you know, it's an archetypal case, I think, of all we have is a hammer, so everything looks like a nail. And I think there is still this view that you are stuck in East Berlin in the 1960s, where, you know, we are conducting this war against imperialism, of which, you know, the Yankees are the avatars. But, you know, we live in a very different world. So, yeah, you know, while I'm sure that Donald Trump has not won any friends in South Africa on any side of the aisle for this, I do think that there is a need for South Africa to do some introspection and ask, you know, how did we get to this point?
Terence, how serious are the consequences?
Okay, I have put this in some of my writings. Anyone wants to look at them, they're mostly on the Daily Friend, I think. If you're talking about America withdrawing aid, AGOA is not existential, but it is useful. So for the companies that are able to operate competitively in the United States because of it, it means a great deal to them. So there are jobs at stake. Of course, South Africa has also implemented a minimum wage that has cost, 200,000 jobs and doesn't seem to be particularly concerned about that. So maybe that's, not an argument that will hit home. I would be very concerned about PEPFAR. I think Figile Mbalula said something about, well, you know, what have we done to reduce our dependence? And the point is that a country growing at sort of 1% a year just isn't in a position to do that. I mean, a lot of its resources are stolen anyway or just squandered. The shows that it's not just about America. Commercial relationships, I think, tend to exist irrespective of the complexion of the government. I would be concerned if there's any blowback in Europe over EWC. If German or Dutch companies start feeling strain, that I think would be existential to us. I think that if there is some sort of major lurch into EWC, you know, it's just sort of game over. Forget Trump, forget trade. So South Africa is at the moment not a particularly attractive jurisdiction to do business in. As a proportion of GDP, investment in South Africa comes in at about 16%. Other middle income countries, that figure is over 30, sometimes closer to 40 and even above. We're a chronic underperformer. And the more burdens you throw on it, the more things won't happen, which is more important than things that actually do. Just expect those, you know, the 33% of the population the workforce that's unemployed to just keep on growing. Expect, you know, half of the population that's immiserated to become more immiserated. Expect more of those, enterprising business people to look for opportunities abroad. This is serious.
You can catch more on that interview on biznews.com or Biznews TV. And, of course, that is Terence Corrigan speaking to Biznews' editor, Alec Hogg. Terence Corrigan from the Institute of Race Relations. Now, Chris Stain, BizNews' Chris Stain, also spoke to retired Colonel Wyatt, who is well known to the BizNews tribe. And Colonel Wyatt has been very outspoken on this matter. Let's take a listen.
But I think the real issue, the proximate cause of why this occurred now is Cyril Ramaphosa saw Donald Trump. He congratulated him on your being sworn in. And they said a cordial phone call. Things are all great and fine and dandy. And Cyril runs off and then just pokes the bear in the eye. Oh, okay. Well, we're friends. Here's expropriation without compensation. We're going to confiscate property from our citizens with no compensation, despite the fact that our Constitution tells us we have to do that. Now, Trump's tweet hints and indicates at a class of people. To me, that class of people are property owners. And property isn't just land. It's houses, it's stocks, it's bonds, it's pension funds, it's cars, it's Bakkies, it's jewelry, it's Krugerrands, it's all that. They can take anything at any time. And I guarantee you that the first two steps with this, when they get a chance, they're going to come after pension funds. Oh, we need 10% because we don't have enough money. They'll take that. And the other thing they're going to come after is they're going to go after any political opponents. If you speak out against the ruling government of the day, you'll get a phone call or a visit. Hey, you know, maybe you should stop talking about the government. We're tired of hearing about it. Oh, you like your pension fund? It won't be there next week. And I think that's going to have the chilling effect that's desired, silent speech.
Looking at the language of that tweet, it clearly was his own words without any diplomatic intervention there, Chris. So he must have been hugely triggered by something our president said or did.
Now Ramaphosa is looking forward, wants to meet with Donald Trump, wants to engage with him. So we'll see if that happens, Chris. I think that Trump might tell him, nah, talk to the hand, not the face right now, and make him wait until Rubio shows up in South Africa in a few weeks. I think that might be the case. And again, I think there's going to be some more trouble coming South Africa's way, but we'll see.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking, out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, Trump is hitting the U.S.'s three biggest trade partners with steep tariffs. He's announced that Mexico and Canada will have tariffs of 25% on imports into the U.S. and China another 10%, and this all with effect from Tuesday. The FT's Amy Williams has more on the story.
Well, he's on paper and initially linked these tariffs to his upset around illegal immigration into the U.S., primarily across the southern border with Mexico. But he also has attacked Canada on that issue. And he's also attacked both countries and China on the issue of fentanyl. However, he has also just railed in general against U.S. trade deficits with other countries. This is an old theme for him. We heard a lot about this during his last administration. And he has said in a press conference on Friday that the tariffs were pure economic and not to be used for negotiating leverage.
So those are the issues that he wants to address with these tariffs. But in what ways might Trump's tactics here backfire?
Well, the main one is that it will just sharply raise prices for American consumers. I mean, we're talking about 25% on all imports from Mexico and Canada, apart from oil and gas, which has an exemption, just going on straight away on Tuesday. And 10% on Chinese imports also. That's across the board. So that includes consumer goods like iPhones. And under his last administration, his tariffs on China were a little more targeted. This is just a very blunt instrument. It is likely to push up prices for American consumers.
Now, you've been talking about the U.S. economy, but what about globally? What sort of scenario might we see should this trade war really become entrenched?
Well, I mean, the two most immediate potential casualties here are Canada and Mexico. They are threatening to retaliate. Then on Saturday, when the White House was briefing on Trump's tariff plans, they pointed out that if Mexico, Canada, or China retaliate, the U.S. would retaliate further. So you quite quickly see that there's no way to kind of hit stop and prevent this from coming into an escalating tit for tat. Prices go up and up and more goods are hit. There's a lot of danger here for countries, not just the US.
Amy Williams has been covering US trade for the FT. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
Mexico and Canada are obviously key trade partners with the US, and they're reeling from the news. And as we heard from Amy Williams, we are seeing threats of retaliation. But let's get more detail from these two economies on the ground with the FT's Christine Williams.
So Mexico and Canada both send more than three quarters of their exports to the United States. Economists have a range of estimates, but all believe that both economies could fall into recession if these tariffs remain in place for a long time.
The FT's Christine Murray has been covering the emerging trade war from Mexico City. And she says leaders from the two countries might team up to confront Trump's tariffs.
We don't know to what extent the two countries will coordinate on the tariffs. It's not easy to do. But on Saturday night, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum to discuss possibly sharing information, avoiding creating problems for the other, and, you know, certainly letting each other know in advance what they plan to do so that they can be on the same page.
Trudeau has announced that Canada will impose its own 25% tariffs on a range of U.S. goods. That includes everything from beer and bourbon to lumber. While Sheinbaum has promised that Mexico will also hit back.
Mexico accounts for about 15% of U.S. imports, and that's products like computers, cars, agricultural products like avocados and berries. Canada is a similar, slightly lower level, but close to that, and it's mostly energy, vehicles, machinery. The two countries can certainly hurt US firms in those sectors. They can certainly put pressure on local members of Congress who might be able to speak to or try to convince Trump to relax the measures. And there is a broader price rise effect for American consumers on the imported products.
All of these new barriers are turning North America's long-standing trade relationships upside down. And many economists are warning that everyone is at risk of feeling the pain.
For decades, the US, Mexico, and Canada have been integrating their economies and supply chains, increasing foreign investment in each other's economies, creating jobs across different sectors. The US-Mexico relationship in particular also covers questions of security and migration. So there is a lot at stake here for the entire region.
Christine Murray is the FT's Mexico and Central America correspondent.
One of the most popular features on Biz News is Chris Stain's weekly sit-down with Neil DeBeer. And in last night's installment, Neil DeBeer cannot contain his frustration as he asks Chris with tears in his eyes why South Africa's leadership is not taking disciplinary action against the 21 ministers and deputy ministers that have been accused of some form of malfeasance. Let's take a listen.
Now, Chris, in this country, we are starting to get used to the fact that if a person is allegedly, is suspiciously connected to something, we know the truth is there. So a list of 21 people, no matter what they were charged with, be it Busasa, be it Zondo Commission, be it tied to municipal mismanagement, or just the allegation, to me, is wrong. And I just wanted to highlight that today, that if there's going to be a change in this country, it's got to start with clean, very clear leadership with integrity. You know, in other countries, Chris, if something happens that has happened in this country, the people automatically step down. But in this country, the more you do wrong, the more you put prit on your backside, then you stick your glue, never to leave that bloody seat. So I think the time will come when we will stand as South Africans and say to each other, nay, nay, we will not accept that a minister can stand in a position and not removed. And if Cyril wants to do this rejuvenation, like John said, they need a reset. They need a reset within the GNU. Well, Chris, we need a reset on ethics. We need a reset of integrity. That's why we as citizens must demand that if you take the oath of office of a minister, that immediately every quarter, you must go through a process of integrity check. You must be looked at your lifestyle audit. You must open your funding for scrutiny because we are paying you. It's not like you are sitting there and earning money through a dividend on your own backup. So to look at a list like this, where people allegedly are being said, but you committed fraud, you took money, you mismanaged. This is an indictment on whatever level we have. And therefore, I have always asked lifestyle audits and if necessary, polygraphs. Because if we cannot have you open yourself to scrutiny, then allegations like these, Chris, will never stop. And this country will always sink their eyebrows and go, but are you real or are you actually hiding something? And this is something I will keep on bashing because in conclusion on this matter, accountability is something that we leave to Parliament, but it seems that now in Parliament, they cannot sort themselves out, so they go to court. Yes, Chris, the new Parliament of this country is courts. And this is a shocking shame that 400 people currently in a tent and still in a tent can't sit down, deliberate, and come up with what is good for you and I. And that is something we must this year hammer on because Cyril says that he is in favor of lifestyle audits. Well, Cyril, do it, but go one step further. Publish it. I dare you.
And you can catch that full interview on biznews.tv on YouTube. Now, in market news, we take a quick look at Vodacom. The group came out with third quarter results today to the end of December the 31st, 2024. Revenue for the group up 11.6%, and Egypt doing particularly well with services revenue out of that country up 44% for the group. And Shamil Yusuf, the group CEO, did say that currency headwinds continue to impact the group in a number of territories in which they operate. Well, that brings us to the end of BizNews Briefing today. Alec Hogg will be back in the hot seat tomorrow when we bring you more on the local and global front. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
This BizNews Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.